We were overdue for a guest episode on high school counseling conversations. That's why I invited Leslie from Informed Decisions onto episode 43 to talk to all of you listeners about advisory programs. You are going to love this episode. We talked all about what advisory programs are and how to get them started, how to get administrators on your team to get buy-in to even get this thing off the ground. We talked about teacher stereotypes and the problems and the roadblocks that you're going to run into with your teachers and how to overcome those. We talk about student buy-in. I just know that you are going to have your wheels turning, big ideas flowing after you listen to this episode. Let me introduce you to Leslie before we get started. Leslie is a licensed social worker living in Brooklyn, New York, who loves providing educators with social, emotional, and life skills resources to engage multicultural youth populations. She believes that together we can support youth in making informed decisions about their lives and futures. She specializes in program development, advisory and SEL, class push-ins, small groups, and working with court and gang-involved youth and teen moms. She loves working with high school students because she says that they say the funniest things, and I would definitely agree with that. Now, we'll jump into the show. I'll let Leslie introduce herself, and let's get going. High School Counseling Conversations is a podcast where we talk about exactly that, a casual potpourri of school counseling topics intended to grow us as school counselors, but also give us space to enjoy each other's company. I'm Lauren from Counselor Click, and I'm sharing my experiences and perspectives as a high school counselor. No topic is off limits, and I'm certain we'll cover it all. I'm your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Whether you're just getting your feet wet as an intern or you're nearing retirement, you'll feel like you're just popping in to catch up with your school counseling bestie. Let's go. Welcome, Leslie, to the show. I'm so excited to have you here. I gave the listeners a little intro to who you are and what you're all about before this episode got started, but I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself as well. Now, y'all remember, Leslie is Informed Decisions on TBT and all the socials. She brings a wealth of knowledge about advisory programs. So in this episode, we're going to get into three different stakeholders that you want to make sure that you're roping in and getting on your team before you get advisory programs started in your school. But I know that we're going to have a lot more to talk about other than just that. So let's go ahead and welcome Leslie to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so absolutely excited to be here. So a little bit about me. I'm from Brooklyn, and I've worked in so many different schools and so many different types of schools, from public to charter to pilot schools. And, you know, a role that I guess over the years that's developed for me that I absolutely love is like program development and setting up advisory and social emotional learning programs. So I know sometimes people don't know what advisory is, and like that is the quickest explanation. It is literally just social emotional learning. The difference is, instead of us counselors implementing it, all the teachers in the school implement it. So it actually takes a little bit of a load off us, so that we're not responsible for, if you have like 1,000 students in your school, hitting all 1,000 students with the social emotional learning.
Yes, that makes total sense. Like everyone coming together and participating and helping out versus just you, the counselor, trying to do this for 1,000 students or something.
So I know I strayed a little bit. So my background, actually, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I have also, you know, in the schools where they make you do roles, I have done programming and, you know, setting up classes. So I do feel, you know, the school counselors pain in making sure all kids are in the classes they need to be in, they're graduating. So I've had to take on some of that before in the smaller schools. But I definitely, you know, have done everything from individual counseling to working in small groups to, you know, implementing and doing school-wide advisory programs, class push-ins. And, you know, a while back, I was really focusing on specializing with gang members, teen moms, court-involved kids. That was really, like, my main focus in working with students in the school. So, you know, I've kind of had that hat of everything, you know. And, you know, in some of these smaller schools, crazy roles. Like, at one point, I think I had was teaching PE. So,
oh, my goodness. You have done it all.
sometimes you ask those questions for sure. I have like had some of those crazy roles.
Yes, I think everyone can relate to that. Everyone can think of a time where they were like, is this part of my job description? I'm not sure. Now, my only experience is working in a pretty large public school. Tell us about some of the different settings that you've worked with, because I know it's pretty diverse or has been diverse throughout your time as a social worker.
I've worked in a public, I've worked in pilot, I've worked in charter schools, I've worked in New York and in Boston as well. So I was in Boston for several years. I've done both middle school and high school. At one point I did elementary, but just knew that, you know, high school is my absolute love. I love those kids. I think they're the funniest things on the planet. And, you know, and everybody asks you, why do you work with high school instead of elementary? But it's like, because they're the best. They're like hysterical.
Yes, I think I know that I would. And I think that all of our listeners would agree. High school is the sweet spot. We love these students. We love laughing with them. Now, tell me about advisory programs. Have you done them in all the different programs you've been in, like in all the different schools you've been in? Or is this a newer thing for you?
I mean, ironically, when my first job at a grad school that I had in a school, their huge thing was like school-wide advisory. So I was so lucky to have that opportunity. The way they had it set up was really interesting. They did every Wednesday, it was a half a day. An advisory was just half a day. And that second half of the day was all like professional development training. So students were in advisory for like hours. It was, you know, it was a really interesting model. So I've had models where, so I was really lucky to learn from the school, all the, you know, the great information that they had. And that kind of started getting me. And in those PDs, I also had to learn how to write lesson plans.
See, that's really cool. It feels like they set you up for success here. Like the school was already like, hey, this is important. We want to do this. And they set you up for like, hey, this is how we're going to do it. Versus where I hear from a lot of counselors, the counselor is saying, hey, we should do this. How can we make this happen in our school? Like they already had that ready to go for you as you stepped in. So then at that point, did you have to scramble and try and put something together for this program?
No, they already had it in place. The programs I was running then was I was doing rites of passage programs, and I was doing, you know, more gender focused, some anger management. So typical groups at that point. It was when I left there and went into other schools, that's where I was like, all right, I've already seen this great model. Here's different types of lessons that we can implement. And back when I started, I know this gives away my age a little, but it definitely was not, you couldn't type in and get a lesson plan. There was no such thing. It was like reading a book. And for me, working in a city, it was like Sally and Billy went to the football game and she was a cheerleader and he was on the football team. And I'm like, well, you don't need
And you were like, this will never relate to my students.
Right. So it was really at that point learning how to write curriculum that went toward multicultural students and like engaging them, hands-on activities. And that kind of sparked like my love and my passion for writing curriculum, working with kids, making sure they were engaged. And I think that's where it started. So then over the years, when I went, you know, I've been in a lot of different schools, grant-based positions. When I went to these other schools, I really, you know, started from scratch. So that's where it changed, where, okay, what are we looking for here? And I did that fighting that everybody has to do. You know, like, I think now it's just developed more that I've heard like those advisories just so much more widespread. And I know it has different names like seminar or SEL programs or whatever it has at the school. I just think compared to when I started, I used to have to fight to get the programs implemented. Like, this is really going to work. So, you know, I've been there, so I definitely have a ton of answers. I know I'm sure that your listeners have so many questions about like, all right, now what do we do if we want to get this program started?
Yes, definitely. Well, let's move into that then. What advice do you have for a school counselor or a social worker who is trying to get these programs off the ground and implemented in their school where maybe this hasn't been done before? What advice do you have for them?
So if we're working right and you need permission from your admin or your principal, all I have to say is data, data, data. I know we love it. You love it. You know?
Yes, it's what speaks. They are going to listen if you provide that data.
So, I mean, there are definitely programs that exist that are fantastic. Like Castle has a great program. They are something you can look up. And I'm sure that they have statistics. I mean, the stuff that I know off the top of my head is not very recent. But, you know, they have programs that they've gone through with, you know, anything that's social emotional learning. is going to bring that difference, you know? And you could talk to them about evidence-based practices where you're including, you know, your graduation rate, your decrease in suspensions, and your decrease in detentions, your increases in, you know, students attending class, your attendance.
Yes, there are so many places you can look for that data. It is all so meaningful. Last episode was all about collecting data.
The one thing I have to say, though, when you're looking at the data, if you're going to supply for your principal and say, like, hey, I'm going to do this for 1 year, you need to make sure that, and, you know, I'll talk about it more later, but you need to make sure that it is a quality program. Because if someone's like, okay, the teacher goes in the classroom and it's study hall, then that's going to affect, you know, you're not making those quality connections. So, you know, the principal is going to want to hear my numbers go down for those reports that they have to send in. And, you know, once...
Yes, it all has to be done with integrity by all the people, or you're not going to get the results.
Correct.
Okay, well, then how do you make sure that the people do it with integrity? How do you get your teachers on board to do that?
Well, you're not... Your number one is having your principal on board.
Okay.
They're on board. They're going to support you. And then you can say, this is what I really need. For teachers, and I have so many, you know, it's the same as like that student that comes in, and I know this is your favorite, Lauren, is that when the student's like, can I change classes because my friend's in the class? Like overcoming those obstacles of...
Yes, there are so many obstacles from principal buy-in right. to students, to teachers saying, oh, I've already tried this and I'm not going to do anything new. So tell me how we're going to overcome this. What problems are we going to run into? And then what are we going to do about it?
So I've found like there's almost personalities that go along with this. And I've definitely found like there's that teacher that's like, oh my God, I'm so excited for this. I always wanted to teach this, but don't have enough time in the classroom. I'm so glad this is happening. That's your easy person. That's your person that is on board with you and is going to support you. Then you're going to get the people that have been teaching forever that teach like more the technical stuff, your maths and your sciences. And this is not for everybody, you know, like I'm stereotyping here a little bit, but in general, that's the pushback I get. Like, I don't want to talk about my feelings. Well,
right. It goes against everything that they believe as a human anyway. So why would I also do this with students?
And then you have to push back. Well, we're not talking about your feelings. They're talking about their feelings. So, you know, you definitely have the different types of personalities. And you also have, you know, it's also the way you set it up. Like the one, again, I've been through so many different models and I've seen ones fail because they don't want to implement it correctly. And I've seen ones, you know, that have been really successful. And a big thing that's really helpful for getting teacher buy-in too is getting that permission for the PDs from your principal and making that PD time literally their planning time so they don't have to do extra planning.
So you give them all the things that they need and they go through it until they're confident. And then once they're confident in it or they've asked questions, like then the time is for them. Is that what you mean?
Correct. Well, your first year too is a little more PD intensive because you want to also do, remember, teaching is very different than facilitating a group and counseling. Everything is almost like that in between. So for like counselors, where you have an activity that you know how to do, it's a more detailed activity. Where for teachers, it's a less detailed, you know, lesson plan. It's like that middle of the minds type of thing. So, or the meeting of the minds, if I can say that correctly.
Yes, we're both coming together. It's right. Like teachers have to take a step forward. Counselors have to take a step forward because neither of us are comfortable in this position. Like counselors may not have done classroom lessons before. Teachers may not have facilitated conversations around things like feelings. Everyone is taking steps towards each other.
And there's another little secret that I have too. If you implement and facilitate your class correctly from the beginning, you have your students running it, like after a month or two in. By the time, you know, I had students that would start facilitating the activities. Once they know your style and if you haven't implemented correctly, it literally is like you prep the lessons, you have the information so the students can work with it. And like they'll ask the discussion questions, they'll facilitate the conversations. And it's more like, you know, you take that step in to like guide them. So it's more like youth-led and adult-guided where you say, well, maybe this is a better, you know, why don't we look at this a different way for some of the stuff that they need a little more support in? But
Yes, I never thought about that before. But if you're doing it well and you're doing it well over and over again, then a student knows what to expect. They come ready to participate. And it's a whole different feeling than when it's not done well and they're not buying in. You give them that structure. They know what's coming. They know what to expect, except every time we come, we're going to talk about something different. So it keeps them engaged and looking forward to the next thing. You know, if you capitalize on that energy, like when you walk into a classroom and they see you and they're like, yes, we don't have to do algebra. It's like they know it's going to be something new and different. Like we got to make it fun and engaging too. I think we have a real advantage right now. Things are changing and students are more naturally bought into social emotional wellness and they're getting rid of that mental health stigma. So why not capitalize on that energy? I think students want to have this information for themselves. They want to be able to help their friends. Like, there's such a real shift. Have you seen this to be true in your findings?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's again, so now we're kind of moving from buying to the teachers, from buying to the students.
Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. They're all just connected to each other. So I keep kind of tying them together.
So you're going to have the students that are super introverted and they're going to be like, Miss, can I please do a worksheet? And you're going to be like, no, we're going to learn communication. So when you have a job and have to work as a team, you know how to work as a team.
Right.
You know, you're going to hate it at first. And some of your kids may say like, this is kind of babyish, but trust me, even like the hardest, toughest kids have like gotten involved. You know, they're going to sit and like not want to participate at first, but like once you get them excited about it.
Do you have any examples of any students who are like really tough, arms crossed, sitting in the back, didn't want to participate? Like, how'd that go?
There was one of the schools I was in, there was advisory for the entire school. And some of the teachers, like, again, there wasn't enough PD so that the teachers understood what was happening. They would all go to the bathroom.
Of course. And then
some of the tougher ones that like end up in your office all the time would go to the restroom during every advisory period and end up in my room. Teachers at the end, like after their first time, I'm like, listen, they ended up in my classroom instead of wandering the halls. Like I kept them there. So, you know, they're like, just keep them. They're like, you can take them all the time. They would just end up in my room. But the kids that like don't want to participate, if you do it and engage it. And, you know, it's that same thing as a counselor. Like, you know, it's all about building relationships. So that's all it is really like, you don't have to have any secret anything. If you build relationships with these kids and really focus on being like the most important thing in your class.
Yes, then at least they're, even if they don't participate, they're going to sit back quietly and at least not cause a scene because they have that established relationship where they at least respect what you're trying to do.
Well, another example of something that I was doing that wasn't my job was when they had me in in-house.
Wait, what's that?
And with in-house? So in-house is like in-school suspension or like, you know, detention or whatever.
Okay.
And so I would start doing, because at first they had me doing like tutoring and I'm like, well, I don't know anything about this.
That would have been me too. What?
I'm going to start running like impulse control. And I started doing all types of like social worky, you know, school counseling type of stuff. Because it wasn't working, me trying to help these students with things that I hadn't done in a million years.
What a way to make lemonade out of lemons. Like, I don't know. This is not going to be helpful or effective. How can I make this better?
Well, the problem used to be is, you know, and I definitely remember the student, is that he said, Miss, I'm going to come see you. And this is how I'm going to come see you. I'm going to throw a chair at the teacher. And then this way I can come see you. And I said, why don't we try this method? Why don't you just ask the teacher, if you can come see me.
Imagine that.
I never thought of that. You know,
oh my gosh.
Like one of those things. Yeah, that was another one of those crazy rules that I definitely had. But I guess, you know, all of these experiences have helped me learn more about the students and like how to engage them in different ways to interact. And, you know, there's so much too that you learn from the students when you're doing this too.
Yes, I bet you get so much feedback that you tweak your lessons, you add to it, you say they like these topics, they didn't like these topics. So much feedback from teachers and students. I bet if you're starting or already running an advisory program, your curriculum and topics and the way you're doing it is changing all the time depending on your student needs. Have you found that to be true?
Lauren, where do you think that all my lesson plans come from?
From trial and error, right?
From doing this for years and years and in the classroom, and every time I did it, I was like, all right, what did you guys like? What didn't you like? We figured it out. You know, and sometimes we even created ones with friendships, they wanted themselves. They wanted me to use their names because they thought it was so great.
I love that. They were so proud of their scenario and they wanted to share that with other people that you could use it with their names in it. I love that.
They did. Like, there, you know, there's so many different ways you can go about this. And student, so if we, I know we've talked a lot about like getting them involved and engaged, but student buy-in in the beginning, the best way is one is I have a freebie for your listeners.
Perfect.
Which is like what I like to talk about. It's a super simple survey, but the way that I started off all my advisory and SEL programs, regardless of what it is, anything life skills, is I give them the survey and allow them to check it. This way they're like, they know that they've chosen the topics we discuss.
I love that.
So even if we cover every single thing on the list, they had input. And that's another, you know, I also do an activity with them like on expectations. So setting up the ground rules where they create that. I'm like, where do you get to create that? You don't do that in science or in math or, you know, it's the rules of the school. Here you get a little more leeway to, you know, the basic ones that you have to have, but they get to then have input on what they do. And those two things allow them to shape, like, here's a class you actually get to, you know, you design yourself, everything else you walk into. So that really helps with a lot of the buy-in because they're like, eh, I don't really want to talk about this topic. Well, hey guys, you picked it. And they're like, you know what? You're right. We did pick it.
And you know what? Even if it wasn't the one that they picked, that means somebody else in the class picked it. And if it's important to my friends, then like maybe I can make that a priority or make it important too.
Yeah, I mean, I really never got much pushback with it. You just do the reminder and it really worked well.
Yes, then that's teaching them skills for later in life too. It's giving them this independence, this autonomy to make decisions and carry them out and work together as a team. I think that's so valuable.
The other thing I was thinking about too, because I know sometimes the counselors are a little nervous. They're like, I've never set up these programs or I don't know what to do. Like, what would my position be?
Yeah, I'm wondering that. Like, once it's up and running, are you in your office? Are you in a classroom? Are you helping teachers? What is your role?
Different models, I did different things. So,
got it.
Right. In that school, I actually had my own advisory and I had advisory for that time period.
Oh, well, they probably felt like the MVP class, like they were getting something so special because they had the director of the whole program, right?
I hope they did. You know, you can choose to facilitate. Another role that some of people like is if you're developing the programs, doing push-ins. So going in and where some of the teachers aren't really sure, don't know how to model, you go in and you model and you literally co-facilitate the class with the teacher for a while until they get on board. Or like, you know, if it's college, you want to talk about college counseling, like you push in and you do a college counseling lesson with the students in that class. So you can use that as, you know, you go around and help support other teachers.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like I think it would also help inspire some trust, like with that teacher, if they've never seen you teach before, they have no idea what you're going to teach. Like they get to see you, you get to see them, you both get to learn from each other. And then like, if the counselor is not confident about being in front of a class of students, like this could build the counselor's confidence as well, like doing it with the teacher, taking steps towards each other to learn from each other.
Well, hopefully if you have a small advisory, it just feels like a group anyway.
Yeah, it's like a small group. I hadn't thought about that.
So, I mean, listen, I've had advisories that were 30 kids. I've had advisories that were 12, which is fantastic. I've taught the entire school advisory.
How did that go?
I was doing more advisory than individual counseling. So individual counseling happens sometimes in that school. So that it was more, they wanted the character building stuff. You know, you also have it where advisory is every day. You have it advisories once a week. There's so many different models. And I mean, there definitely are better models than others. And I guess a big thing is, you know, once you get admin approval, really figuring out what's best for you and what's best for your school and how this is going to work for your students. Like, what do they need and how do we fill this?
Yeah. And maybe that's a conversation that you as a counselor are sitting down and having with your principal. Like, hey, here are a couple different ways I've seen this done. Here's how I think it could work in our school. What do you think? And then opening the doors to that conversation. And then give them some different options. Like, hey, here is how we've done an alternate bell schedule before. We've already done this with a home room, or we have this flex period in the middle of the day. Give them some options and talk through what that could look like. To me, it just feels like there are so many different types of schedules that would make this work successfully in a school.
So there are definitely a lot of models. There are ones that you want to stay away from.
Yes, we need to hear about those.
So definitely stay away from one that's like one period a week. Because what's going to happen is your kids are going to completely forget about the stuff you talked about the week before. I just feel like that's really tough. The other is when they try to do it as a homeroom, that it's 15 minutes. It's homeroom. That's not advisory.
And then kids are coming in late and missing it on purpose.
Right. So, I mean, you can do it your first period and have everybody do that, but you have to make sure, like, it's really clear, because you will have those kids that are more difficult to reach that are like, this isn't important. And especially if your school grades it for, like, you know, the classes that are like an elective, then that's a problem, because now they have a failing grade for something that they could have passed by showing up and participating.
Right. So no homeroom, no once a week, any other program layouts to avoid.
I mean, you also want to avoid making it current events in study hall. Those are also the advisory programs that fail. I mean, some of it sounds kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah, most things are probably not self-explanatory these days. If you don't say, hey, these are our goals, this is what we want to do with this program, a teacher might use it as a study hall or a time to catch up on some more grading. And we don't want that to happen.
Something else I just thought of, I know it goes back to like teacher buy-in too, is also making sure that you have lessons for them. Because I currently have a teacher friend now that called me up and she's like, I'm doing advisory for the first time. What do I need to do? And she's like, they handed me a curriculum, but it's literally mindful breathing for an entire year.
Oh, wow.
She's like, this is not going to work.
Yeah. Like, how is this going to go over?
Right. She's in a school where, you know, I don't know what they call it in other parts of the country, but here it's like when you've gotten kicked out of
like an alternative school or something.
Right. Your alternative school.
Okay. So you have built out like a bunch of curricula for programs like this, right? In your TPT store?
Yes and no. So I have a good amount of resources in there. But if it exists and you're like, I really wish you had this, I probably have it. It's just not in my TPT store. It's like not TPT ready. I mean, I have essentially, I have for 6 through 8 and I have for 9 through 12 and I have like real life programs and I have all this stuff. And I can't work quick enough to get it out there. So that's something, you know, if people connect with me and they're like, I really need this. I mean, you can't tell me it for tomorrow. But like, if you tell me ahead of time.
Yes, that is a big to-do. That makes a lot of sense that it would take you a while to get that ready for everyone. That a lot of times people need a ton of resources to make this happen. So as we talk about curriculum and stuff, tell me about topics. Are there topics that students love that they're asking for? Are there topics that you as a facilitator love to do with your students?
So twofold, because we just talked about like what not to do. When someone's like, the first lesson I'm going to do is goal setting. Nope. Don't do it. Your first 2 weeks to first month of advisory should absolutely be team building. It should be team building for the community. I mean, have it be coming up with the name of your advisory. You want it to connect to the school in some way that it's like a cultural thing. And you're really just working on team building. And one other thing I forgot, this was a lesson that I heard. So it was a teacher that was going to do a lesson and they were sitting with an AP and they were like, we want you to do something on trust. So the teacher's idea was, let's have them look up an article and write something up about trust. And I was like, oh, no, that is right.
Okay.
So
I thought you were going to say something like they made them stand up and do trust falls.
Right. So
like very Mean Girls-esque, you know, stand on a desk and lean back.
Which always... No, trust falls to me are always, I feel like, is like an insurance issue waiting to happen.
Of course it is. Why would we do that?
And it reminds me of Mean Girls.
Yes.
I mean, you can do like the blindfolded trust. Like, listen, there are advisories where I've had PE teachers that were really good at that skill that did a lot of like ropes courses and like more physical stuff. And this is where...
Yeah, like there's a time and a place, but it's not this.
Right. Well, that was the school that allowed them to sign up. So your music teacher could implement and facilitate conversations around music and how you incorporate that into social emotional learning. And the PE teacher was allowed to, you know, do the ropes courses, and they went on trips. And, you know, so there's just so many different great ways you can do it. But like staying away from the goal setting, because it's going to be absolutely fake. Because they're going to just write it to get it done and not really think about it because they don't really have a connection yet.
Yeah, it's important to think about having that buy-in from the beginning instead of just setting out so quickly on setting some short and long-term goals before they even really know why we're doing this stuff to begin with. And then even just thinking about using your advisory program as a whole to connect students to your school. Like when we drill down and say relationships are such an important part of our students feeling connected to other adults and other students, this advisory program could solve that problem for us if we do it right from the beginning.
Completely agreed. So and I love that you're like so excited about this as well, because I always feel out there like I'm the only person that absolutely loves this and it's my crazy passion, but I really love implementing these things. And like to have someone else that's super excited about it is fantastic.
Well, here's the thing, Leslie. I feel like I'm a pretty positive person overall, but I spend a lot of time like trying to convince other people that they can be positive too and that they can make positive changes in their school if they have the right mindset around it. Like it's not impossible to get people on your side when you have really good ideas and really good programming that you want to put in your school. So yes, I'm sharing the passion and the energy alongside with you. And then this is funny, as we've been talking, before I came to this interview that we set up, I was not thinking, oh, I've implemented anything like this before. But then as we got to talking, I was like, we have done character lessons on a larger scale like this before, where we have polled the students and the teachers about topics. We have sat with a committee of people to come up with how the schedule is going to work and how it's going to play out. So I guess I didn't even think that, oh, wait, I have some experience doing this before. And I just want to reiterate, everything goes so much smoother when you have the support of everyone, when you have the support from the top down of your principal and people sitting around looking at each other, figuring out what the problems are going to be and doing that before we hit the problems. Do you feel the same way?
It does. And I've been on both. I've had where, so that's so funny when people say advisory councils, like I've had one, but it was for advisory. So,
right. We like want to make a distinction between advisory council, where you're getting a whole team of people to give you feedback on your school counseling program, or an advisory program that right. You're running in the school. Like that, you might have, like you said, a group of people giving feedback on your advisory program, I think, which that brings a lot of value too. I just want to make sure that we are using two different words, I guess. Advisory council, something completely different. I have episodes of that I can link in the show notes, but we're talking about something completely different in this episode.
Yeah. And I mean, definitely the big, you know, again, you need a buy-in across the board, but you know, and it's so funny because anyone that's doing this that now is going to hear, they're going to be on a board that's putting this together and they're going to hear people want to have the time management and organization of stuff. And you're going to go like, oh, this is not going to go well. Like if that's your first activity. So
yeah. And I don't want counselors or social workers or people who are doing social emotional lessons to discount the knowledge and the expertise that they have. Like, you know what students need in terms of like the pathway of topics to get there, what they need first and what the progression should be. So just because you don't feel like maybe you have the skills to be a teacher in the classroom or that doesn't come natural to you doesn't mean you all can't work together to get there. Like, we get to get excited to do something like this in the classroom.
We think that, but then they're like, this is just something else that I have to do. Again, this is why I did the PDs and I gave them lesson plans and I modeled some of them and was like, here you go. If you need my help, let me know, because you know, and I definitely went in and was like, oh, this became a study hall.
Oh, that's the worst.
You know? But, you know, it has, like, I've seen some amazing advisory programs, you know, and there's just so many different things we can do. The fun thing about this is that everything else, right, that we think about in school is already laid out. There's, like, all these different standards and all these things that they have to meet and all this exists. With this, it's like, make it your own so it fits your school. So it becomes twofold, right? It makes it a little more difficult sometimes to like put it together because you're creating it from scratch. But at the same time, it's really molded for your students.
Have you seen specific topics that your students have loved over the years?
They like the ones with friendships and scenarios.
Yes, that makes total sense. Mine would always be like rereading my text messages, rereading my journal, because the friendship scenarios and social situations were so spot on. And I'm like, no, I just work in a high school. Like, I know what you guys talk about.
Well, they also think you're psychic from walking down the hallway and you overhear conversations. And then when you bring it up, they're like, Miss, how do you know that? And then I tell them I'm psychic.
Of course, of course.
Because they believe, like, they don't realize that they're sharing this stuff out with everybody. I mean, I'm trying to think of other things they absolutely love. Like, dating relationships they love. Friendships they love. Anything that has to do with, like, hurtful words and languages, like empathy and learning how to speak to each other. All stuff that they absolutely love.
Yes, those are so good. Thank you for sharing those ideas. I seriously love that we're getting to talk about this, because in a high school, it's so easy just to keep going throughout your day, doing the same thing, or discounting how powerful a larger scale school program can be. We see it happening in elementary schools with character education, and we forget that our high schoolers need that too. They need that development of the soft skills and developing their feelings and talking about their emotions, because a lot of them didn't get that when they were little, and they might still not be getting that at home right now as high schoolers. And we want them to be prepared to launch out into the real world. I love this role of being a high school counselor. What a gift to be able to give that to a student, to give them that space to process and to help them grow in that way.
I'm so glad. And if I was a student, I would want you to be my counselor.
Oh, you're sweet. Stop. Well, Leslie, what have we not talked about that you feel like listeners still need to hear about? What have I not asked you about yet?
I mean, all of these topics can go in, you know, you can go into detail so much more because there's so much to do. I think maybe something to think about too is cultural competency.
Yes, definitely.
So again, I've been in such different schools where I've been in schools where the teachers are different ethnicity than the populations. And that's something where you really do want to cover PDs on that and knowing how to do that. Because you also don't want to stifle, you know, or it could be a socioeconomic background. So the teacher may be a social different, you know, socioeconomically than the student. And it's really like listening, you know, skills we have as counselors, not all teachers have learned to do.
That's very true.
You know, that's really important. You don't want to stifle, you know, the student's culture. Also, if you have schools that have larger populations of different ethnicities and backgrounds than others, you may have a really quiet student in the back of your classroom that isn't participating as much because they're looked at as a token or they're not comfortable because people don't feel like they understand them. And that's something else to really just be mindful and make sure your educators that are doing the programs really think about.
That's so true. I remember having an entire like cultural counseling class when I was in grad school. And then that just becomes second nature to what I'm doing. Of course, I can always learn more and I can always be better, but teachers might not have had that at all or in a long time.
The other thing that I think is really important too is classroom management. If you're teaching to the most difficult student and you're facilitating to the most difficult student, some teachers, you know, listen, there's some that are absolutely amazing, but there's some that definitely struggle. When we used to have the team level meetings or the meetings where we were talking about accommodations for the students and making sure they had their needs met, you know, some teachers had no issues with the students and some did. And it's more like collaborating on what works well for the student and making sure that you have those tools for classroom management set up. So sometimes, you know, counselors are absolutely amazing with it. And sometimes it's not something that a counselor is used to. And I guess, again, what I used to think was like, oh, I have to go to another how to do this with a student PD. I actually ended up helping me, you know, later down the line to know how to work and make sure that the students are getting. So I guess those are the two things, too, to make sure that are incorporated.
Yes, you know, those are both two really good things, the cultural competency and the classroom management. They're things that we can work on as counselors and things that teachers can work on too.
I don't want people to think of this as a scary thing because it's not scary. It's a great opportunity to, you know, some schools I know are mandating it actually. So I know I don't know much about what's happening out of my region, But I know that there are people in different places of the country where, you know, it's not necessarily called advisory, it's called something else, but social emotional learning programs are now required by the school. And now the counselor's like, great, what do I do with this?
Okay, great segue into what I want you to do next. I want you to give a pep talk to that counselor, the one who feels like, how am I going to do anything else? How am I going to have anything else out on my plate? How am I going to convince the people at my school to do this program? What do I tell them?
You have the skills that you don't even realize you have. You do all these small, you know, and I'm assuming that most counselors do some kind of small groups if they have the time. I know summer schools are larger than others and don't have it. But if you've had those small groups, it's the same exact activities. You already are equipped with the tools. You already know what to do. You already are a great listener and are good at feeding back and know how to direct students on getting what they need. And that's literally what this program is, you know? So it's using the skills you already have and just shifting them in a different way. And I think that sometimes, and I talk about this a lot too, you know, with the people like that follow me, that don't forget, like sometimes people forget and they start advisory programs and forget about the counselors, that they're such an underutilized resource in knowing how to already do this stuff. Instead of coming up with that, let's read an article about trust and write it. No, I bet your counselor already has an activity, or they can create an example from one of the ridiculous scenarios that come in their office.
Exactly, exactly. So. Well, thanks for that pep talk. That was exactly what I was looking for. Sometimes counselors forget and they have this imposter syndrome that is overwhelming, and they forget that they have counseling skills that they can use with students. And then also with adults, you have the leadership skills to make something like this happen in your school. Leslie, you just gave us so many good things to consider to implement an advisory program in our schools. I hadn't even thought of so many of these ideas or thought, wow, we would be talking about this for as long as we have, because there was just so much goodness to talk about. You brought so many great ideas to the table, and I know the listeners are going to be able to do really great and really big things with it. I'm confident that listeners are going to love this episode, and I can't wait to hear their feedback. Leslie, as we're nearing the end of our time together, will you share with the listeners where they can connect with you or they can find you on the socials and all the places? I will put everything that you say in the show notes, but you know, if they're listening on the go and they're like, who is this person? How do I connect with her? Tell me and we will share that out.
So I have a free Facebook group. It's advisory / SEL programs. And it's, you know, it has the informed decisions logo on it. So it's pretty easy to find. Just make sure you fill out every question because it kicks it back to me. But you know, you take care of that and you're in the group and you get free lesson plans, ideas. I give tips. Also Instagram and a TPT store too. And oh, I do have a blog, Informed Decisions blog as well. So that's giving, we're really building that out to everything we just talked about in more detail. So if they need more information about something. And please even, you know, reach out to me in the group and say, hey, listen, I thought about this. I really need help with this. That's what I'm here for, you know, to help support you guys the best that I can.
Yes, I see that Facebook group being so valuable in having access to you to troubleshoot things and then a whole community of people who are also doing the same. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today, Leslie. I know that listeners are going to love this topic. They're going to love learning and hearing from you about advisory programs. So thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you made it here all the way to the end, I want to remind you of something special that's coming up. I need you to go record your scariest, spookiest school counseling story to be featured on an upcoming episode of High School Counseling Conversations. In this special Halloween episode, I'm featuring your stories anonymously. No one will know they come from you. And I want to hear something embarrassing, something you're glad you don't have to relive, or maybe something that someone would listen to and say, I'm glad that wasn't me. Make it appropriate for me to put on air. I can't wait to hear what you have to say or what you have to share. Leave it in a voice memo, or you can send me a DM if you just want to put it in text message form. I'd be happy to include it that way. I can't wait to hear your stories. CounselorClick.com/spooky. I'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All of the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Send me a DM at counselorclick. That's CLIQUE. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'll see you next time.